And good morning. It's now 8:06. You're listening to KPCW 91.7 and 88.1 FM across the Wasatch Back. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher today. Well, stay tuned. We'll have Devin Lucy with ABC Weather Report in just a moment, followed by Snyderville Planning Chairman B. Peck. She'll be in to review last night's meeting. At 8:25, Park City Manager Diane Foster and Economic Development Director Jonathan Weidenhammer will be in to discuss the agenda for Thursday's City Council meeting. And at 8:45, three-time Olympian Tracy Evans-Land will be joining us to talk about the upcoming Olympic Day event she's planning here in Park City. Stay with us for the KPCW Local News Hour. Right now, joining me on the line to give us details of the weather, Devin Lucy. Good morning to you, Devin.
Good morning, Lynn. Yeah, actually, things are looking really nice out there. It's just a bit windy. It's a bit breezy out there, too. Yeah. That actually helped with the temperatures. Did you feel that chill Monday morning?
Oh, yeah, it was cold. In fact, I swear I saw frost on my neighbor's roof. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't doubt it because temperatures for frost, if you dip below 38 degrees, that's when it's possible. So anywhere from around 34 to 38, then obviously you get closer to freezing that occurs. But, yeah, anything under 38, you can do frost. So it was a cold morning. Could you believe if, luckily we didn't have any moisture sticking around with that, we could have had snow up the Wasatch back here in the middle of June coming in. So thank goodness it wasn't that. But temperatures will be on the way back up. Winds are around. It's really kind of about the wind forecast the next few days. It'll be breezy out there today. Winds will be 15, 25. Gusts a little bit higher than that. Maybe push 40 to 45 at times at the strongest gusts, and generally some sustained winds is what we'll deal with. That's actually helped to hold those temperatures up overnight towards tomorrow morning. I already got 68 in Heber, and we're already 60-degree temperatures downtown, old downtown Park City and historic Park City. Now, as we look ahead, with temperatures ranging to about the mid-70s here today, and we'll drop temperatures back just a little bit, shift winds to about a northwesterly direction. Tomorrow's a weak front through, doesn't bring any rain, but we'll bring temperatures back down. We'll do lower to mid-70s tomorrow. Then it's the slow creep back upwards. We'll do mid to upper 70s as we go Friday in towards the weekend. The weekend, dry, actually looking good. Still, breeze is going to be around all the way through at least Saturday. So I'd call it breezy today, tomorrow, going in towards Friday and Saturday. Breeze finally starts to ease as we head towards the weekend, and that's going to allow temperatures to get back into the positive territory of mid to upper 70s, 80s, the chilly start that we had Monday morning. In fact, by next week, we're starting to bring some really hot air back into place. So the trend's going by about the middle to the end of next week. Could be pushing mid 80s once again for those really hot conditions back there, at least for the mountains, considering. And we're staying dry. We're not really going to see rain chance for a while. Maybe creeping in the end of next week towards the following weekend, we could be looking at that. But already thinking ahead towards this weekend, good weekend plans for almost everywhere across the state along the Wasatch Back. We're looking good, rain-free, lots of sunshine, just it's breezy conditions first part of the weekend, still into Saturday. Sunday's looking the better of the 2 days if you don't want to have to fix your hair every 10 minutes if you're going outside to come back inside. So we have a pretty good weather pattern to get to. And again, if you think of the state parks, national parks, anywhere across the state, all weekend plans look great, Lynn.
Sounds great, Devin. Thanks.
You're welcome.
And it's now 8:09.
This KPCW weather report is brought to you in part by the law firm of Christopher K. Greenwood.
This is Randy Barton with The Local View, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. weekdays. Tune in. We feature and showcase local news from our award-winning news department, Leslie Thatcher, Rick Bruff, Lynn Ware Peak, and Renee Bodley. National news from NPR, international headlines with the BBC, Marketplace, your phone calls, public service announcements, Lost and Found, Many Voices, One Show. Brought to you by Park City Live, Sammy's Bistro, Heber Valley Tourism, Miller Orthodontics, Matt and Missy Kelly, Park City Home Team.
It's now 8:10. Good morning. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. The Snyderville Planning Commission on Tuesday night did not make a decision about the request from a Silver Creek landowner for two accessory buildings. But in a public hearing, almost all the speakers said they were concerned about the size of the buildings, their impacts, and what's happened before when similar buildings were allowed in Silver Creek. KPCW's Rick Bruff has this report.
The applicant, Gregory Dill, is asking to build a horse arena of 18,500 square feet and a basketball court building of 6,400 square feet. The proposal attracted an audience of about 30 people, Roughly a dozen people spoke, all neighborhood residents. Many, like Dale Nelson, said the buildings won't fit in an area with a rural character and open space. Nelson said the proposed buildings are too large.
There's visual impact to the area with the size of the structure, which is much larger than any other structure in the current surrounding area. There's specific impact, obviously, to our view corridor, and there's concern relating to commercial, public use, traffic, noise, night lighting, maintaining the second home facility free of debris and waste. We're very concerned about that. If the homeowner's not on site, they don't know what's going on at the property. They can enforce it. We can enforce it. And if a conditional use is given, we would expect the county to enforce it. And they haven't in the past.
John Tinkerpaw was among the residents who said large buildings have morphed into commercial uses before, out of compliance with their conditional use permits. But he said the county doesn't enforce against those buildings in the Silver Creek neighborhood.
I'd like to remind the commissioners that they have employees at the county that are supposed to be enforcing this. And in the past, employees have stated that they would try to enforce it. It has not taken place. The gym is going to become another business. There's no way someone is building a basketball court on their property and not having friends, teams, players, etc. coming in.
Critics asked, if this is approved, what will stop the next Garage Mahal and Mega Barn, as one speaker put it. Scott Petler said it might set a precedent for more buildings.
If we have four large buildings on this property, what's to stop everyone from, what's the limit? I mean, how many large buildings can we put on our property? You know, I've got 8 acres. Does that mean I can put 8 riding arenas on my property? I don't really know, but we need to figure out what we're going to do as far as limiting the amount of and size of buildings that are on these properties, because as we add more the buildings, we lose our open space, and it changes the character from agricultural to industrial, essentially, or commercial.
The owner, Gregory Dell, said now he lives out of state much of the year and rents the property, but he plans to spend more time here in the future. He told the audience that the buildings are for his family, including 3 athletic sons. He hopes they will become part of the community.
You know, I don't know. I got 3 boys. They're 4, 7, and 9. My wife rides when she can. I have a lot of friends. I like to entertain. Friends, and you are all still invited. My home is, and I don't want this structure, but I still welcome you all with open arms to my whatever I do there. It's not going to be like the Great Gatsby or anything like that, parties.
The architect for the buildings, Ivan Broman, who's also a Silver Creek resident, said they've done everything requested by the county staff.
You know, reading through the staff report, we do comply with every item that they have listed there. You know, so we feel like we've done everything that the staff has asked us to do. We've modified the building. We're willing to do more if we need to make the buildings more compatible. Landscaping. I know he intends to landscape. This is an allowed use. It's a it's a property right. He can build an indoor arena. He can build a barn. And, you know, it's hard for me to hear this, you know, people saying, well, you know, it just doesn't fit. Well, it does fit. But there's one right next to us.
The Planning Commission threw some questions at Development Director Pat Putt, who said in the neighborhood there's no legal limit on the number of buildings. There is some regulation of the size. A building over 2,000 square feet needs a low-impact permit granted by the staff. Over 10,000, it needs a conditional use permit. As for enforcement by the county, Putt said they have only one code officer for the whole county.
It's not an excuse. It's just a reality. A comment was made that he does it on a complaint-by-complaint basis. Unfortunately, just due to resources and manpower, that is true. Does not mean that if the enforcement officer is out and he sees a violation that he can't begin to investigate or take action on that. But yeah, we have one person who covers a broad area to do that.
among comments from the planning commissioners. Chuck Klinenstein said it is not easy to define the character of an area first platted in the 1960s. He urged Dell and his neighbors to work together following what Klinenstein called the Code of the West.
In the West, the Code of the West, if you want to call it that, we used to work as neighbors and respect each other. And I am asking that neighborhood and to come together and define what it is. And Mr. Dell, I would think, would want to be a good neighbor. He already said, you know, you're all welcome to be, you know, come over to my house and visit with me and enjoy my property. And maybe it won't go anywhere, because right now I don't know how to define it, in all candor. But the Code of the West, which a lot of us have forgotten, unfortunately, was about working with each other and being good neighbors.
Snyderville Commissioner Chuck Klinenstein. For KPCW, I'm Rick Burdoff.
News time, 8:16.
Support for KPCW comes from Esko Heating, AC, Plumbing, and Electrical. Now is a good time to get your air conditioning unit tuned up and ready for summer. More information at 855-ESCO-NOW or escoutah.com. That's ESCO, Esko.
It's now 8:17. Good morning. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. Now joining me on the line, Snyderville Planning Commission Chairperson Bea Peck to talk about what went on last night with this application in Silver Creek. Good morning to you, Bea.
Good morning, Lynn.
So, wow. It's really hard to know where to start. And as Chuck Klinenstein said in the end of that story by Rick Bruff, the Code of the West. But that's a little nebulous, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think that related to the discussion that you, over the word character, which you'll find in the general plan that talks about trying to preserve character of neighborhoods. And but you're exactly right. It's nebulous. Maybe you know it when you see it, but you can't necessarily define it. And it's something that each neighborhood and area in Silver Creek in particular, you know, it brings out a lot of emotions and difficult to quantify.
Yeah, well, about 25,000 square feet between the horse arena and the basketball court. Is this, you know it when you see it? I mean, does this sort of thing define the character of the neighborhood for you, for the other commissioners?
Well, speaking for myself, the area, certainly equestrian uses are commonplace, and I don't know how common necessarily a gym would be, but it's on his private property. It's for his personal use and his family's use. And I think it becomes a little bit of a slippery slope if you start dictating to people what they can do within their own family and within their own property. The fact that it's not necessarily regulated by the code, we don't have anything in the code that says how many accessory buildings you can have, nor the size of them. So, you know, the question's been put, what if somebody wants to come in and put in a 150,000 square foot building? Well, we'll probably have to deal with that at the time. I don't have an answer. But until the code says something different and micromanages some of these private properties, there's not a lot that we can do except ask applicants to be considerate of their neighbors in terms of, for instance, we talked about manure, sights and sounds and smells and things like that, traffic and stuff like that. And trying to address that is difficult when it's more of a subjective measurement as opposed to something that we've defined, i.e., you know, you can have two buildings, you can have three buildings, they can only be this size. And that just doesn't exist.
Right. For so very long in land management codes, we talked about minimum home sizes. And now as our, shall we say, consumptive lifestyles are going to the other extreme, I know maximum sizes are being discussed. But so far, have you seen any other instances where they've said, no, the maximum square footage you can have on your property is X amount?
No. We have, you know, I mean, that comes into play with density, but again, this is residential. And we do talk about minimums, and that's what bumps it from a low impact permit up to the conditional use permit is the size of the building. If it's 10,000 square feet or more, then it goes to a CUP, which is a bit more stringent. And that's where we are. And you're right. People with who have the means and the property really have the ability to essentially utilize it to the maximum extent they'd like to. So it can be a difficult situation in a neighborhood that maybe is reluctant to see too much change. But unfortunately, there you go. Silver Creek, Highland Estate. Mm-hmm. There's a huge mix occurring of much larger homes and smaller homes. So I don't know where we can draw the line legally.
Right. It seems as though people specifically choose neighborhoods like Silver Creek and Highland Estates because they are less regulated until the time that 25,000 yeah. square feet by someone wants
until
to be built.
Until it's in your backyard, and then you want all the regulations you can get, and unfortunately won't impose it on your neighbor. So
right.
It's too bad. I hope that everyone in that neighborhood will have another public hearing once the application has been completed with more detail, and we will hold another hearing and have more opportunity for the neighbors to weigh in. And hopefully, although people were polite and respectful, there's that long-term quality of keeping good relationships within your neighborhood.
Right. Now, we all, when we buy into a residential neighborhood or we have a house, maybe it has an empty lot that's in our view corridor, and we think, gee, aren't we lucky? And we realize that at some point it may be built on. But we never think in our wildest dreams that it'll be 25,000 square feet of horse arena and sports court or gym.
Well, it's two separate buildings.
Right.
And
yeah,
I think they certainly have made an effort to, through grading and location, to maintain as low a profile as possible. They have lowered the height of the barn specifically down to 29 feet, so they're well under what they're entitled to. So I guess just to be clear, it's not one 25,000 square foot.
Right, and I should have made that distinction. I was just doing it for ease of adding the square footage together. But I'm wondering, is there anything that says anything about view shed or in the code, view corridors, when they would otherwise be completely obliterated?
Well, there aren't any real protections necessarily, but again, it's subjective on what part of the view is being blocked. There's a home and a barn there now, and the pictures that they showed us giving perspective from, I think it was the north side, or maybe it was east looking westward, that there's still quite a clear view of the mountain range. It's just that you wouldn't necessarily be able to see directly through this particular property to the other side of it, which, I don't know that being able to see through your neighbor's property is necessarily a view shed. Certainly they can see over, and at least from the depicted pictures, nothing was impairing their ability to view the mountainside, but there's no particular protections for these things except goodwill of the neighbors.
Right. Can you regulate things like number of animals and parking spaces? And this is, having to do with the concern about it someday becoming a commercial site.
Well, there's no chance it's going to become a commercial site. The code does not allow it, and we're certainly not making an exception. We haven't been asked to make an exception. And I think that brought up the enforcement issues that, we're stretched on enforcement. But home-based businesses are allowed. They have their own limitations. This property will have conditions on it. Other than the obvious, there's no commercial use. We will also put specific conditions on it that there will be no commercial use. And to the best of the county's ability, if there is an issue and it's reported, then the county will act on it. So.
Okay. So Pat Putt said he'll look at two major issues. One is the amount of water this lot has. How does that work out in that neighborhood?
Well, in any neighborhood, and this has been in place for years, at least since I've been here, that before you get a building permit, you have to have a letter of service from your water provider. And that would be Special Service District Number 3, and which is Silver Creek. So before they pull a permit, they have to be tapped onto the system, which is 1 acre foot. And we've had information before us earlier in the year that had to do with the conversion of the veterinary hospital into the dog kennel and how much water was going to be used. And I think there's already good information that says that 1 acre foot is likely to be more than adequate for this household that's going to have up to 8 horses. So I don't know that that's a real concern, but we'll certainly vet it and get the specific information for the next hearing.
Okay. And the next hearing is when?
I'm not sure. I don't have it on the schedule. We didn't, it'll be when they submit their changes. Staff puts their report together, and then they'll come up on the agenda. So,
okay.
I don't think we had a date coming up because it wasn't continued. We didn't need to continue it to a date certain. It was not intended to have any decision made last night. So.
Okay. Out of curiosity, what's the next largest building in Silver Creek if this horse arena would be 18,500 square feet?
I think there's a horse arena right next to them, in the property next to them, and I'm not sure of that square footage, mm-hmm. and there was a private use barn or arena put in that a family was using as an indoor ice rink. I don't know that this is the largest. It could be the largest in this particular area of Silver Creek, but there are a number of properties that have a number of accessory buildings.
Okay.
I don't have that information.
Okay.
And we don't, as a matter of code, have a limit on the size.
All right. The other item of interest on the agenda last night was the tail end of Rocky Mountain Power's upgraded transmission line into mm-hmm. Snyderville. And you all approved this fairly quickly. Were there any issues for you, Bea?
The only issue I had was asking the question, is this the tail wagging the dog? Mm-hmm. I know that there's some delay in the decision-making process connecting between us and Colville, not between us and Colville, the line between us and Colville that's before the county council, which I think is going to be resolved shortly. And I just wondered if that decision would require some change in the alignment, but I was told no, so that if there's no change in the alignment, then there was no problem with getting this back end of the line finished up. That was my only question.
When they talk about an upgraded transmission line into Snyderville, what is upgraded? The amount of power? I've noticed a couple of times over the last couple of months, power has been compromised and due to no real reason in particular. So it makes me wonder about, just needing more power to come online.
Yes, this is part of their project from Wyoming, Evanston, right down through to Quinns Junction. And it's upgrading and installing, in addition to the 46,000 volt lines, the 138,000 volt lines. And in some instances, they leave the 46,000 line in place, which acts as, I would call them, branch lines or subsidiary, and that they're upgrading the main trunk line. So those 46,000 volt lines don't necessarily come down, but the new line will come in and run parallel to it. So there'll be, I don't know if it's redundancy, but the function it serves is that the higher voltage line comes in as probably one of the main sources, and then the 46 with a better power source then serves as branches and cuts off to Park City proper, to Camas, to Oakley, so forth. And here in Kimball Junction, I think our juncture line comes up from Salt Lake City.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I was going to say, so that the lights at Kimball Junction wouldn't go out on a monthly basis. But you're talking about a completely different...
Devil's in the details. Yeah. And who knows? It's, gremlins.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else from the meeting, Bea?
No, everything else seemed to run fairly smoothly, so we'll look forward to the next public hearing on this issue, on the barn issue in particular.
Okay. Bea, thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you, Lynn.
And that's Snyderville Basin Planning Commission Chairperson Bea Peck. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment to speak with Park City City Manager Diane Foster, along with Economic Development Director Jonathan Weidenhammer. They'll be talking about some recommendations to the Park City Council tomorrow night, the Dog Task Force, what their findings were. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Additional support for programming on KPCW is provided by Sammy's Bistro on Bonanza Drive, open daily, 11 a.m., sammysbistro.com. Peterson Calder Real Estate, Berkshire Hathaway, selling Park City since 1989. ExperienceParkCity.com. Sean Potter, Estate Planning in Summit and Wasatch Counties. WasatchLawGroup.com, 647-5951. Done to Your Taste Catering, 21 years perfecting life celebrations. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
This is Earl Foote, founder of Nexus IT, a proud sponsor of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Nexus IT provides comprehensive cybersecurity solutions to help protect your business from hackers and today's internet-borne security threats. More information at nexusitc.net or at 435-487-9099.
It's now 8:32. Good morning. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, filling in for Leslie Thatcher today. Now joining me in the studio, City Manager Diane Foster, along with Economic Development Director Jonathan Weidenhammer. They're joining me to talk about some items that'll take place tomorrow night at the Park City Council meeting, which begins in work session at 3:45. A couple of the heavy items on the agenda: the Brew Pub Plaza design moving forward, as well as recommendations from the Dog Task Force. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, let's start with tomorrow at 1 p.m. You may have a little field trip over to Main Street, way over to Main Street, to the Tupelo Dining Deck. This was brought up last week at the meeting. I figured it just went through, but are there some issues with that dining deck?
There were some concerns on the part of council, and it's not just because they've had a lot of eight-hour meetings and wanted to get outside. The question for them is, I believe there's 501 Main Street has a dining deck right across the street, and so they had some concerns about the narrowing and some safety concerns. Staff believes that they've moved the deck to a place where it's not right on the corner by the post office. Mm-hmm. So staff believes that it's okay, that they've figured that out with the owner, but at the end of the day, City Council absolutely has that ability and wants to go see the site, and it's their prerogative, and they feel responsible, and so it's the right thing to do. So we'll be out there at 1 o'clock, and it is a publicly noticed meeting, so if anyone from the public wants to attend, we'll be out there at 1 o'clock.
Will there be appetizers?
Unfortunately, no, but I think one of the good things is that in the past, Tupelo hasn't served lunch since they've been open, and part of the requirement of a dining deck is that you do serve lunch, so we'll have another fun lunch Main Street option if this does get approved.
Right. So it seems like they would just need to move the dining deck sort of downhill off of that corner, because it would seem to me that it could impact traffic turning in to the by the
right. And I believe that's what's been done.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the Brew Pub Plaza design update. Jonathan, this is you. And the first thing I have to ask you is, in the packet, it says Park City Plaza with Brew Pub in parentheses. And in these times of using other people's names, other entities' names, isn't the Brew Pub Plaza where, I mean, isn't the Park City Plaza where El Chubasco is? That name's been taken.
Sure. Sure, Lynn.
I just wanted to point that out. I mean, I know that you don't want to call it the Brew Pub Plaza forever, or maybe you do. Maybe you should call it the Top of Main Plaza.
We're going to call it Alpha Beta.
We'll have a competition, and you can participate in the naming. No, you're right. Our design team isn't from here, and they probably aren't aware of that. And my nostalgic bones don't want to get rid of the Brew Pub name quite yet, so
right.
We're just kind of in no man's land on the name. So
Okay.
We'll figure that one out.
All right. We'll give you a buy on that one.
And the city does have a naming policy. So, you know, I think it's pretty wonderful that right behind us is the Bob Wells Plaza. That's a nice one.
Okay, good. All right, so on to the design. This has come back. Boy, when you look at the packet and you look at the number of conversations about this over the last year and a half or so, you know, basically each time the design team has come back, City Council has said, no, that's too much, that's too much, that's too many buildings, that's too much money. So now you're at about four different scenarios. And the earmarked amount for this plaza is a $7 million placeholder.
Correct. No, we've had a very iterative and long process balancing the articulated goals with the built environment and certainly the cost. Last couple meetings ago, we agreed about a $7 million budget was the right amount. And now we need to finalize what we're actually going to build out there. The $7 million allowed for the basic event plaza and the restrooms and the stage. And a certain amount of amenities, but it did not accomplish any built environment. So there's no buildings with it except for the stage, and the restrooms would be crammed into the back of the stage. So we want to go back and just check in. And council said that they wanted to look and see if we wanted to put in buildings at either the northwest corner or the southwest corner of the building of the plaza. And we're giving them some options to do that, balancing the main goal that we have, which is daily activation of the space and really bringing incremental visitors to Main Street, whether they be local or visitors.
So if you were to place a building at the northeast corner of the plaza, and this would be along Sweet Alley right next to the Brew Pub, would that start to get pretty high, like a big wall coming up Sweet Alley?
We've been very sensitive to that. Where it is right now is kind of within existing zoning and matches the zoning height of the buildings across the street. So it's about 27 feet from the current height of Sweet Alley. So I don't think it's too bad. I think with any buildings we're talking about, consistency with the historic district design guidelines, which in that neighborhood also has us consider the adjacent residential neighborhoods, is really important. For instance, if we wanted to put a building in on the northwest corner, which would be right by the Brew Pub's deck, we wouldn't want to overpower or dwarf or diminish or, you know, totally hide that the Brew Pub and their views up the canyon and put them in a big shade hole. So we're trying to be very sensitive in scale and shape to the existing built environment around us.
Would that northwest building, so the one that would be right next to the Brew Pub deck, need to be two stories? Currently, it looks like it's in there as two stories.
You know, there's a number of different options.
Yeah.
It could easily be a one-story building that could be a coffee shop or a multi-purpose shop or a restaurant service. It could easily be that with just a little patio on top of it. One of the options is to have it be a full two-story building, which we're not recommending. And at minimum, we believe it needs an elevator there. We don't want the elevator to come out from where you would go into the parking garage on Sweet Alley. It starts to really mess up the grades and head heights, and it takes away a couple of different parking spots. Mm. If you have to have it in the northeast corner. So again, as we're balancing where the buildings might or should go, we also are trying to consider the different uses that could be in them. We've done some studies on the amount of daily visitors you'd get from a retail use or a restaurant use or a food use. Compare that to more of a civic use, like a multi-purpose space that would just support an event there, or it could be a not-for-profit gala, or it could be a gallery or a rotating exhibit, things like that. And you're getting a pretty strong bang for the buck on the retail and restaurant type uses, probably a medium type bang for the buck on the multi-purpose uses. But you get no bang for the buck on no building. So we are recommending building a multi-purpose space that lets us put the restrooms with it. And, you know, we think it's very consistent with a civic role of supporting the plaza on the whole for a Tour of Utah event or a multi-purpose not-for-profit use, but, you know, it doesn't really force the issue on whether the city's going to be a landlord for a commercial space.
When you describe to people in about three sentences what the city's trying to accomplish with this plaza, what do you say?
I think we're trying to provide a huge amenity for the visitor and for residents and bring people to Main Street, remind them why we're here, and build a great civic and public place.
No matter which scheme we go with, which scenario, there will be a stage on the south end, the very uphill, far uphill side of the plaza, right?
Correct.
And then there will be green area, green space and seats. And I did see a water feature mentioned this time.
We do. You know, I call it recreating Poison Creek. I always kind of dreamed that we'd have something that would harken back to the Poison Creek that used to run the whole way down Daly and down into town. So we're going to bring that back in. The plaza is, in addition to being a very big and flexible event space, is intended very much to have its own park-like atmosphere. It's going to be heavily landscaped. There's going to be some tiered grass areas that you can sit on or sled off of in the winter and run around with your leashed dog.
One comment on a water feature is that a lot of times people think it's a waste of water. And as you know, the city is very conscious of water conservation. If you look at our golf course, every one of those sprinkler heads is separately controlled, and they have a what's called an evapotranspiration management system out there. Anyway, a water feature uses and loses less water than grass because the surface area of grass is greater than the surface area of a water feature. So it's we're not looking at wasting water there.
That's a good point. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
Good one. You learn something new every day.
Nerd fact of the morning.
There we go. Hey, one final question on this. There has been discussion all along about alleviating the impact on Hillside Avenue, which is just south. It's that little connector street from the top of Main over to Marsac Avenue. I just cannot imagine how it would alleviate traffic from Hillside.
Well, I mean, there's kind of two different issues going on. There's the overall downtown kind of circulation plan, and you know, whether it's concierge vehicles coming down the hill from the resorts or whether it's delivery trucks first thing in the morning. There's only two ways in and out of Main Street, right? Well, three, and Hillside's one of them. You're not allowed to access Main Street via Hillside, but it still happens. And, you know, the question specifically on this project is building this plaza making that situation better or worse? And so in an isolated scenario, we've done a traffic study and the preliminary findings that this project is not making that broader commercial delivery and access situation worse. But I think council is also sensitive to the ongoing input from the neighborhood up there, and I think we do need to look a little bit more broadly, and council's expressed a desire to do so on, hey, what are we doing in general? So we're going to make sure this project doesn't make it worse, and I think we're going to continue to see the city engineer and transportation manager look at the broader implication of commercial access to Main Street.
Okay. But just to be clear, it does not create another ingress, egress from Main Street to Marsac.
Correct.
All right, let's move on to the off-leash dog areas pilot program final report. This will be presented during the regular session at 6 o'clock. And you have findings and a final recommendation from the dog task force.
Yeah, the and we very much appreciate the input of the public and the dog task force. And there have been a few different things that have done in this process. One is obviously the dog task force has been meeting on a regular basis. The second is that there's data in the report from observations. So there have been members that have gone out and done what is considered statistically significant surveys out there to say, okay, I'm out there, I'm seeing, how many dogs am I seeing, how many dogs on leash or off leash am I seeing at the trailhead, how many people are picking up their waste. So it's direct observation, and the numbers the number of observations is a pretty high number. So what we see there is that we still do have issues with people on dogs on leashes when they're getting out of their cars and at the trailhead, and also with picking up waste. Those are definitely two issues, and I was out running there this weekend, and I can tell you that apparently somebody's waiting for the poop fairy, because the habit of picking up dog waste and then leaving the bag is quite an interesting one. And I know some people leave it to pick it up later, but you know, it's not a great sight out there. So there was also a survey put online, and this one, it is important data and it's valuable data, but we view it as qualitative data because it's not only the people who knew about the survey were taking the survey. So on that particular survey, there's a lot of great information, and some of the pieces that when I was looking through the data this weekend, I noticed that when you find a concentration of people either very dissatisfied or very satisfied, that's an area where you really want to say, we want to look at this some more. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing right now is bringing it to City Council saying, hey, given that the peak time for Round Valley utilization is winter and spring, you know, in the heat of summer, it's surprisingly quiet out there except for the early morning hours. So we actually, staff feels like we've been through, and Heinrich Dieters has done great work on this, and I was talking to him the other day, and he said, we've been through the peak season, and so we're probably at the point where City Council can make a decision if they'd like to, although there is an alternative in the report that they can continue the pilot program. One of the very strong recommendations, though, is that we continue to look at this through the Recreation Advisory Board, and so that RAB would continue to look at this every year and that we keep tight controls on it. There's also a recommendation to include a new liaison, and we very much appreciate the work of Clay at the county and that the Animal Control does, and we work closely with them, and the staff works closely with them. And police, especially, when they've got an issue, they definitely call them out. There are also times when Heinrich will work with Clay and they'll have a special focus on an area. Okay, we've got a Quinns Junction trailhead area. We want to have increased leash enforcement, particularly at trailhead, for example. So what we're asking, what we'll be looking for in the future, not in this budget year, but in a future year, is adding a liaison person specifically on the dog issue and to off-leash dog areas.
Mm. So there wasn't a lot of push for at least one trail in Round Valley that where dogs wouldn't be allowed at all, just to accommodate those people who may be afraid of dogs.
So that didn't necessarily show up in the data, but again, these are pieces of information for council to consider, along with hearing from the public, which is part of the reason why we put this on the agenda where we did. We wanted to make sure that people who work during the day could come to council. So this is actually, my guess is it'll show up, it's on the regular agenda, which means it'll be after 6. Just with the number of things that are on here, I'm guessing the earliest it would probably be about 6:20,
okay,
or 6:15 or 6:20. And City Council very much does appreciate when people come and talk and hear their concerns. And that is a concern they've heard before about being fearful about dogs.
Right. And also, if they were to continue the pilot program throughout the summer, then the information would bubble to the top about, I know some people were also asking for another off-leash trail area in the summer, in the heat of the summer, which may be more shaded. As you said, the big use is in the spring and the winter for mm-hmm. Round Valley.
And remember that a lot of our trails that are particularly in wooded areas are on private property, so that's a whole other issue. But I do know that's one that they'll continue to look at.
Okay. Quickly, you're going to possibly amend an ordinance. This all has to do with e-bikes, where they can go, where they can't. And there's one classification for a Class 3 e-bike, which I'm not sure what that is. What in essence are you deciding?
You know, I don't know exactly what a Class 3 e-bike is, but again, I think we're just kind of ratifying and re-clarifying in terms of the moving state code that we want to encourage alternative transportation modes, and e-bikes on our multi-use pathways is something we want
okay.
and encourage, but we also very much want to keep them off of our soft surface trails.
Okay.
And I do know some of this had to do with this year the state went in and cleaned up their language, and it looks like e-bikes may actually be allowed on the rail trail. Right now they're prohibited from state parks, but that was changed in the state law, so I believe that Heinrich's addressing that as well. And, you know, it is addressing the classes of e-bikes have to do with what speeds they go. And that is a concern. You know, if you're out by the farm and someone comes flying by you at 30 miles an hour on an e-bike, you know, there's a fine line there between a motocross bike and an e-bike.
Right. Okay, so that'll be looked at actually right after the dog task force report. So folks may want to stay around for that. Anything else?
Let me see. What do we got coming up?
The budget.
That'll be a public hearing.
Yeah.
Approved next week?
Be approved this week.
This week.
So the state code defines when we have to approve the budget by. And so this is the week that unless council wants to have a special meeting either Friday or Monday, then we plan to have them adopt the budget. And I believe they've spent a ton of time on it, made lots of tweaks and adjustments to it. And we haven't seen much from the public on that. We have had some public input, particularly from some of the nonprofits on that. But we'd very much invite folks to come to that. Oh, I know what we do have to announce. There's a going away party tonight at 5 o'clock at Rotary Park.
That's right, for our very own Monica Goodner. We will miss her. What, is the whole community invited?
I don't know. Why not?
You just
they
did
all
it.
Listen to the Classified Show.
That's right. We will miss Monica. 5 p.m. Rotary Park. We don't have that much wine. All right, Jonathan Weidenhammer, Diane Foster, thanks for your time this
thanks.
Morning.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back after this. We're going to talk about Kids Play International and a 10-day cross-cultural exchange taking place here in Park City. Stay tuned for that.
Proud sponsor of KPCW, DeJory Center will partner with Mountaintown Music to host a summer concert series on the lawn of the DeJory Center every Thursday from June 16th to July 21st. 6 to 8 p.m. for music and concessions, and State Road will be serving from 5 to 9 p.m. Special thanks to Summit County Raptax. More information at DeJoryCenter.com.
Deer Valley Signature Stores are pleased to support KPCW. Signatures offers apparel, gifts, and specialty gourmet items from the Deer Valley Signature Food Line. We also offer Deer Valley Resort logo merchandise. Open daily at 625 Main Street and in Silver Lake Village, 649-1000 or DeerValley.com.
It's now 8:51. Good morning. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher today. Well, Kids Play International, KPI, is rooted in the belief that sports can be a powerful catalyst for social change. The group is hosting a 10-day cross-cultural exchange here in Park City from June 16th to 26th. Also is involved in a panel discussion taking place on Tuesday, June 21st at Temple Har Shalom. This is about women and girls in sport. Joining me now to talk about everything going on is three-time Olympian Tracy Evans Land. And good morning to you, Tracy.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
So three-time Olympian, you just told me, Lillehammer, Nagano,
Salt Lake
and
City.
Salt Lake in freestyle aerials.
Yes.
Wow. And so since then, have you been working on bringing girls into sport? It's such a big movement.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, actually, my mom is my inspiration behind all of this. She's a nurse and did a lot of, still does a lot of medical volunteer work. And so she really encouraged me to take a volunteer trip. So back in 2008, I did that. And I think what impacted me most over in Malawi, Africa, where I was at that time, was watching the girls and boys play sport and just the relationship that they had between one another. And obviously, soccer is so huge in Africa. So watching the girls and boys play a familiar sport, the boys were faster, quicker, more aggressive, and girls aren't always also encouraged to even play sport. So they were very submissive. But what was really cool to me was to see the dynamic of we also brought over baseball, a sport that they had never even heard of, played. And so when we were playing and introducing this game to them, this sport to them, it was a complete change in how boys and girls learned. It was a level playing field. No one was worried about who was stronger, faster, slower. They were just learning and playing side by side. So to me, as an athlete and, you know, all that sport, you can learn from sport on the field, off the field. The relationship that I saw, the shift in learning and the relationship between boys and girls when they learned a sport that had no preconceived idea mm-hmm. of who should be better was really cool to me. So that really catapulted me into thinking like, what more could I do in a long-term basis with working with boys and girls in sport for sport and gender equality.
Right. So interesting. So part of this 10-day cross-cultural exchange, you're bringing 8 Rwandan coaches here. And that's wild. So how is this all going to go down? And is the public invited? I know the public's invited to this panel discussion, but
right.
in terms of the workshop.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we are super excited. Our program is in rural Rwanda. So this is going to definitely be a very big culture shock experience for these 8 Rwandan coaches. There's 4 men, 4 women coming over. And yeah, you know, I think, you know, our hope really in this exchange, it's all about, so we got a grant from the U.S. State Department. So it has it's based on this cross-cultural learning. So we're bringing the coaches over to experience activities interact with youth and have discussions about how sport impacts our youth here, how coaches also impact the youth here in sport, and have also the youth and people here in Park City understand what sport looks like over in Rwanda, Africa as well. So I think the cross-cultural discussion and education locally here in a town that obviously we eat, breathe, drink sport, I think can very much be a very eye-opening discussion. And like you said, we have this wonderful guest speaker, Sarah Murray, who is with Women Win, and she's coming to be our guest speaker at Temple Har Shalom on Tuesday at 6:30. And it is free, open to the public. You can just show up. You can RSVP through our website. But also our panelists have local Olympians, Nikki Stone, Emily Cook, Cameron Myler, a couple of the local coaches, and some other gender equality experts that are coming as well.
Will any of the Rwandan coaches be on the panel?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Sorry, that's just like a given to me.
Okay.
But yes, absolutely. Yes, we have three of our other coaches that are going to be there, as well as all our coaches will be there. Three are sitting on the panel, and so they will definitely be sharing how we have built capacity in their training through our year-round program over there, and talk about what sport and you know, and the disparities between boys and girls playing sport looks like globally, and in the impact that sport, like I said, can have on the field, but even more so off the field, and how you learn these life lessons that should stay with you long term, and that sport is not about just being an Olympian or an elite athlete. It's so much more than that, and keeping it fun and just really present in today's day and age, and not being, you know, pushing these kids too much, but just having fun through sport.
The thing that I find interesting, and I could be completely wrong about this, but we, especially in a town like Park City, you know, that's always kind of the end thought, even though by parents, coaches, even though we all claim to say, oh, it's just about having fun. But in Rwanda, and this is where I could be wrong, I would assume that it's really just about having fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these kids simply, the reason that I do work, we work over there, is they don't have the resources. They don't have these opportunities. They don't have after-school sports clubs and boys and girls clubs, YMCAs. They don't have these resources, opportunities. So we have to provide that. And it is. I mean, for them, sport simply gives them an outlet to have fun. And what we're doing is using sport as that catalyst to teach and to really build better relationships between boys and girls, shifting some of these attitudes, behaviors, and these harmful gender norms that exist in developing countries, so that boys and girls both understand how they can contribute to a better life together.
Okay. Kids Play International. These 8 Rwandan coaches that you're bringing over there with the help of the U.S. State Department's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs are coaches of what sports?
Yeah, so they're actually coaches of, to be honest, they are teachers from our 3 partner schools. Some of them definitely played local soccer, but you got to remember, these coaches are not educated to be physical activity teachers or physical education teachers. So we are building their capacity to learn more about sport, and how do you use sport to link to gender equality behaviors and whatnot. So this is why it's so important. Also, when we come over here, we have coaches that are sharing their best practices and how they coach to mentor kids. And so that is a component of what we're doing. We have a couple of activities, actually, that we do have local youth that are invited to participate in on Monday afternoon from 2 to 4. And then on Friday, we're looking for soccer kids that are ages 9 to 15 that would like to possibly come and do our Let's Play Fair program.
Where will that be held?
Yeah, so both will be at the turf field over by the National Ability Center. There's a turf field that's over that way. So, but we ask everyone to email us if possible to put their child's name on the list so that we know how many kids are coming.
Okay, you can email at info@kidsplayinternational is shortened, so it's kidsplayintl.org.
Correct. Yep.
All right.
Or they can go to our website as well.
Best of luck.
Thank you very much.
This is wonderful. Tracy Evans-Lamb, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, this is Charlie Taylor with New Park Terrace and Crandall Capital, delighted to support local radio and KPCW. New Park Terrace offers new townhomes with walkable access to shopping, dining, nightlife, public health club, the Park City Trail systems, and more. Located in the heart of New Park Town Center, more information can be found at newparkterrace.com or 435-602-9995.
This is Dena Fleming with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. Our team, Chim McQuaid Fleming Harris, loves supporting and listening to KPCW and for helping us find our lost pets and cell phones. Our local information is DeerValleyRealEstate.com or 647-8035.